Municipio de Cali, sobre la continuación a toda la urbana life. Vamos a seguir un rato de Green Yesterday, and then go into the regulation. But I understand that maybe there might be possible that people only brought the regulations.
Yes.
Oh, okay. If people then brought the regulations, we'll deal with the regulations on it today. And they make arrangements for finalizing our meeting, but I think, yeah, for finalizing the report. Yesterday, we also learned that there's one or two departments that are outstanding. And we will be informed in due course in terms of when they are going to appeal with that. I think that we have welcomed everyone, and I hope that this meeting will allow some interest from some of the colleagues who want their comfort with this. This is a very interesting meeting. I'm sure the more people the more people will find it interesting for us in the future. But also welcome Mr. Steve. Are you a full member of the
alternate
from Copper? You had it talking about what we do about the report of the AG. We know that we have 12 students from Copa, but somebody must monitor this throughout so that we don't wait for the end of the year. Look at the those points of emphasis that the what's the general information throughout the year so that we can. That's to ensure that the department at least gets a better audit report next year. But the other challenge that we have to look at through our administration is the issue of the Minister of Poverty Government. Have reportedly said that he wants municipalities as well to get a clean audit by 2014, around in 5 years' time. So I think that as a committee, we must also find a role as an appropriation committee to say, how do we ensure that these things do happen? To take place. So, with all these few remarks, I would like to declare this meeting open and without any much ado. Just before we allow the researchers, we have sent out this regulation, and we agreed yesterday that maybe we should use this opportunity to go through the regulation without a potential cut if we familiarize ourselves and be able to engage properly. The research unit has prepared a summary of this regulation. So, may I allow the session, our session to take us through?
Thanks, Chairperson.
myself and my colleagues is we will assist one another to take the honorable members through the resolution. So it's not the research unit per se, but two researchers from the research unit.
My ears are very
because if we are saying it's the research unit, it means we are including all this other portfolio. You know, so whereas
I don't want to get
just in appreciation.
I stand by myself.
Yeah. Chair, we will look at the summary and the analysis of the preferential curriculum and regulation as we have done, but also we will also, I think we will get more insight as well from the National Treasury when they come to present this regulation. For us is to just take you through the regulation, the important issues, the areas of clarity and all of that, and the experts on these regulations are the National Treasury. However, the purpose of the regulation is to ensure that the government's preferential procurement procedures are aligned with the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act. As we know that initially we had a BEE which was only Black Economic Empowerment, and the new concept was introduced, which is the new definition which was introduced, which is broad-based Black Economic Empowerment, because the feeling there was that the old definition was not clear as to, you know, what is it that the Act is intending to do, you know. So they now introduced the broad-based economic empowerment as a new definition. And also these procedures of the procurement should be aligned as well with the code of good practice in the whole process. So the process focuses on acquisition of goods and services, where you also have your regulation says the current preferable procurement regulation determines that human disadvantaged individual status and certain FDP goals should be used to determine preference points in the awarding of bids. You will see in your regulation you've got your acronym which is called HDI. That mainly refers to your human disadvantaged individuals, which is more or less the same with the previous disadvantaged individuals. So what they're saying is that the status of the HDIs plus certain goals of activities, which is your reconstruction and development program, should be used, I mean, to determine the preference point in the awarding process. So the preference point, they're using two formulas there, which is AD over 20 for the acquisition of goods from 30,000 to 1,000,000. And again, they introduced the new formula, which is 90 over 10 for the acquisition of goods which are more than 1,000,000. Now, we know that the RDP had its own goals, its own intentions, you know, which is the reconstruction and development program. I mean, where it was intending to empower, you know, previously disadvantaged people, I mean, through giving, you know, jobs and all that, but without generating any revenue for the state. And when it became so-called, if I may use the term, bankrupt, you know, the government came into being to introduce the GEA, which is the Growth, Employment and Redistribution Program, which also was mainly intending to empower, I mean, people which are previously disadvantaged through job distribution, and also at the same time, I mean, generating revenues for the state. That is where your privatization issues came into being, you know, from the GEA, you know. So that is just, you know, an overview of where does this RDP came and when, you know, was, you know, stopped and all of that. But now the regulation emphasizes that the goals, the status of the human development aid should be aligned with the goals of the RDP, you know, which is addressing the same aspect, which is to empower the previously disadvantaged individuals in the process, in the bidding process. The two formulas that I've spoken about, the one formula is 80 over 20. I am not sure how to determine those formulas, but what I picked up is that that formula is applied only for the acquisition of from 30,000 to 1 million, and the other one, which is 90 over 10, is only applied for the acquisition of the from the 1 million and above. Now, the there are certain conditions that are attached in these formulas. One of the most important conditions is the one that says it's only the highest bidder that should be selected for the acquisition of those goods or of those services. Either it's the letting or it's the selling of goods by auction or by any other producer or by the organ of state and so forth and so forth. The regulation also further provides in part two that because part one is mainly based on the definitions, which, you know, something that we can just, you know, not look at. It further highlights the important issue of planning and stipulating of preference point system to be utilized. These formulas in this regulation are being referred as preference point system, these two formulas. So it means before the bid can actually take place, or the invitation for that matter can take place, there must be a proper planning by the state organ. There must be a costing. There must be an accurate estimations being conducted, being made, you know, for the bid before it can be, you know, materialized. And also, hence we know that in the state organ, mostly the planning is problematic. Planning part of it is problematic. So this bill is emphasizing that there must be a proper planning. There must be some feasibility studies, investigating the research, that the research process that is being conducted before the bill can, you know, kick in. And on page nine of the regulation, we can see the definitions of the formula that I've just spoken about, which is 80 over 20. Where they are saying the PS stands for the point scored to comparative price of bid or offer under consideration. PT, comparative price of bid or offer under consideration, then P minimum is equal to comparative price of the lowest bid. Well, when the process is conducted, we know that they make sometimes a rating. Not sometimes, they make rating, they do the rating of all the bidders. On the table of subsection 3 of section 4, you will see there's number 1 up to number 8 under the broad based platform empowerment status level of contributor. So that means the 100% compliant, you know, with this policy of the broad-based economic empowerment will be rated as number 1 and will be given 20 points, which is the condition of the first formula, which is 80 over 20. Then the person that complies but not 100%, which is less than 100%, will be given 18 points, and so forth and so forth and so forth, until a non-compliant contributor, who should be given a 0. And also the same as the 90 over 10 preference point system, you know, it's the same logic that is being used, that the compliance to this policy, the 100% compliance is number one. Then the number one, how much do we give number one? We give 20 points, and then number two, number three, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth, until non-compliant will be given the zero rating.
10 points,
yes, I'm sorry, it's 10 points, yes, for the 9 over 10 formula. Yeah. And also, it also says, on section 5, it also says that the only the high speed that will be given, what we call, that will be selected. However, these conditions that are attached to this formula, which are saying it's only the high speed to be given the award, they are somehow, somewhere contradicting with the section 9. In page 13, where the heading says award of contract to bid not scoring the highest number of points. Now, section 9 of section 1 says despite subregulation 4 of section 5 and so forth and so forth, only if a reasonable and justifiable ground given, that person who is not the lowest bidder can be selected. Section 9, subsection 1. Now the question that you might, the transversal question that you might ask yourself, or National Treasurer when they come in to say, how do you measure the motivation that this is more reasonable or more justifiable than any other motivation? Because you can have people that might not, you know, qualify, but because they've got ulterior motives, you know, which might end up being selected and given that motive, then I think there must be a clear grounds. There must be, you know, some, I don't know, some indications or specifications as to how do you go about measuring that motivation, under what conditions that motivation should be. It should be specified, because if it's not specified, if it's, you know, general like this, it puts someone to a trap, you know. And it said that, say, under section 2, section 9, subsection 2, it further says that motivation should be made to National Treasurer and to the Auditor General within 10 working days. Now, it doesn't say the motivation should be made before the bidding process or the award is made to the highest bidder or to the lowest bidder. But it says the letter will be written, or the motivation will be made in writing within 10 days to National Treasurer and or AG after the process has been completed. Which means that these two stakeholders, which are the most important stakeholders, will be just rubber stamping that process, you know. Whereas it should be, in a way, it should give them, you know, some kind of scrutinizing that motivation and check the process of the bid, whether it's really justifiable to give, you know, those kind of contract, you know, to be given to that particular person who is the lowest scoring, you know. It should give them that opportunity, you know. It shouldn't be just the motivation to say, no, the process is already done, but this is our motivation, this is how we've selected the person, that's all. What input are they going to make, because the process is already, you know, done. There's no window for them to make input, but it's the only opportunity for them is the Treasurer and then AJ.
To
look at the process and also make some few inputs, because I believe that since they are the owner of this regulation, you know, they are the ones who the treasurer, they are the ones who are supposed to, you know, look at the process when the bid is not going to be given to the highest scoring person. They're supposed to look at that particular motivation, the justification, the reasoning, and check whether it is still in line with, you know, the way the regulation is prescribing it. That is what I'm saying. It's supposed to have specification in the sections as to say what type of justifications, what types of reasoning, what are the conditions specifically, how do they measure that motivation, you know, so that it provides an angle for the treasury and AG to say, but before you complete the process, did you look at A, B, C, and D? You know. Now, now, probably, Chair, I might have to go back a bit. Before the process begins, you have the committee on this process that is responsible for the whole debating process, which has to be divided into three subcommittees: the evaluation committee, the specification committee, and also the adjudication committee. So now, the regulation also emphasizes that the process, the document of the bid, should clarify whether the bids are going to be evaluated based on specifications or on other issues. The committee that is responsible for evaluation is the evaluation committee. And also the specification committee is responsible for the specs of that particular goods or service. They say, what are the specifications of this goods? You know, they look at those specifications, they also look at the bids, you know, whether they, you know, in line with what they have specified and all of that. Then the adjudication committee, it makes the adjudication, you know, decision. Now the evaluation committee will evaluate if that was specified in the bid document. They will evaluate the bids according to the specifications of those according to the functionality. I'm sorry, not specifications. According to the functionality, the way they defined it is when you have defined the norms and standards of that particular product or service, of that good or service, or else the quality, the prices, you know, the way it functions and all of that. So the evaluation committee will evaluate the goods or service according to those, you know, standards. And also, on section 10, subsection 1, you have a situation where the formulas that I've spoken about, subsection 10, subsection 1, says that in the event that in the application of the AD over 20 preference point system, which is the first formula that I've spoken about, which is the formula that only caters for goods or services ranges from 30,000 to 1 million, it says, as stipulated in the bid document, all bids received exceed the estimated rent value of 1 million, the bid must be cancelled. It means that process, if you are applying this formula, you cannot evaluate, you cannot continue with the process if all the bids that you have received are more than 1 million, because they are out of the scope of this formula. You can only apply the 90 over 10 formula, but through your bid document, which has, you know, prescribed this formula, you cannot continue with those bids. Cannot continue with the process. However, you are given the provision on subsection 2 that, in the event that in the application of 90 over 10 preference point system as stipulated in the bid document, all bids received and equal or to or below 1 million, the bid must be cancelled. The main aim of this formula is to execute all the bids that are above 1 million. If they are below 1 million, stop, cancel the process, stop it, shell the process, or restart it again. However, if one or more of the applicable bids received are above the prescribed formula, all bids received must be evaluated. So it means that, yes, this one is within the prescription of the formula, because it covers, you know, 1 million and above. Then it further says that you can cancel the process and re-invite due to the changes change the circumstances, or there is no longer a need for goods, work, or service offered, funds are no longer available to cover the total envisaged expenditure, remember that we said initially there must be a proper investigation, feasibility studies, proper costing, proper accurate processes, planning, and all of that. So now, how can you have a situation where you have no longer, you have no funds available if we have done that process of planning? You know, that's the question. That you can't arrive in the situation if you have properly planned your process. You know, you can't arrive. This clause, I mean, it does bring a confusion, you know. 10-4B, yes. 10-4B, you know, it does give the confusion. Because on your section 3, where they are speaking about planning and stipulation of preference point system to be utilized. They're speaking about the accurate estimate of cost of the service that is going to be provided. So how can you arrive in a situation where you will have no funds available for the expense? Because we have accurately planned, we have accurately costed, we have accurately estimated all these processes. This is how much it's going to cost me, this is how much I'm going to, you know. So this clause is really questionable. And no acceptable bids are received. You can cancel and re-invite if no acceptable bids are received. Acceptable bids, those are the bids that are within that particular formula, which is 80 over 20 or 90 over 10, depending what is your bid document says. And also, the decision to cancel a bid in terms of sub-regulation, subsection 4, must be published in at least the government tender bulletin or the media where the original advert of the bid was made. This one is clear. And also the part 3, you have the general conditions where they are saying, you know, some of the bidding processes should focus on local areas to empower the local industries, local manufacturers. Therefore, in that bidding document, you must put a condition which says only the local manufacturers will be considered. You know. Should you not be a local, you won't be considered, because that will not be in line, that is not going to be in line with our broad-based economic empowerment, you know, policy. And also, it further says that in subsection 2, only a bidder who has completed a signed the declaration part of the bid document must be considered. Bidders other than exempted micro enterprises indicated in sub-regulation 6 must submit the original bid status level verification certificate certified thereof. And those certificates should be, according to the section, subsection 3, subsection A, should be issued by the accredited agencies, by South African National Accredited Systems, which is SANAS, and framework for accreditation and verification by all verification agencies promulgated in the Government Gazette number 31255 on 18 July 2008. Then it further says that the issued certificates will be valid only for 12 months of that particular period. And also subsection 6 as well, it says enterprises with an annual total revenue not exceeding 5 million per annum are deemed to have status of BBE level 4 contributor and therefore qualified as an exempted micro. But the question here is, you can have enterprises that are not compliant, that are not BE compliant, who might generate revenues which are below 500, which are below 5 million per annum, for instance. what conditions do they, you know, put in place to check that all these, you know, enterprises that you've exempted, they are below 5 million, and they also comply with the broad-based economic empowerment? Yeah. Or it's just automatic to exempt them? Yeah. Which is dangerous, because some of them might generate less than 5 million but not being compliant. So to me, it doesn't solve the problem of compliance. You also have your general principles, declaration, remedies, and tax clearance, where they say it's only in the cases where the contractor has been declared by SARS as a tax provider, as a taxpayer, that can be given the bid. My colleague will make some further input if some of the things have been omitted. Then.
Okay, I think Fedelani has managed to cover a substantial part of the presentation, but I just wanted to alert members that it is very much important for the members to also go through the BBEE Code of Good Practice and black empowerment in understanding, you see, those two formulas, those 80-20 and 90-10, because I think part of those formulas. Sorry. Okay, that's fine. We get that. And Chef, furthermore, I think those two, you see, they are. I think 80%, large part of it is on the price competitiveness, you see, and the 20% will come, you see, through the PE scores, you see. So that's why having that 80-20, they'll consider as who the lowest bid, you see, and then they multiply that with that particular formula. But I think National Treasurer tomorrow will provide the detailed, you see, information. Yeah. Next week we'll provide the detailed information. And another issue that I wanted to highlight, Chair, is on the section 9, subsection 2, the issue that was raised by Pedelani. Also, you see, they're saying that the letter should be forwarded to the Auditor General and National Treasurer within 10 days. But it doesn't come clearly as to what is the role of National Treasurer in that particular regard, you see, because they just sent the letter of motivation. But obviously, National Treasurer, I think, should have a role, you see, after receiving that letter. He's silent to say what will be the role of National Treasurer. And lastly, it's on the cancellation and the.
You mean the
Auditor General? They say it's National Treasurer, not Auditor General. It's a relevant treasurer and auditor general, so I think they should have a certain role to play.
They say the auditor gets appointed. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The auditor general.
And the auditor general. It's clause 9, subsection 2.
2?
Yes.
Yes,
both. Yes, both. And I think one thing that this committee should have an interest on is the cancellation and re-invitation of bids. You'll understand that mostly the spending of government is delayed because of the delays, you see, in implementing some programs. And those cancellations, at the end of the day, I think they have, even though they are put there for the internal for control purposes, but they might have undesired consequences. Having so many projects, you see, finished very late, you see, due to those particular delays. So I think maybe Treasurer needs to come up, you see, with an amicable way to ensure that doesn't happen, because it might have undesired consequences in the government spending. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes.
I mean,
comment made by the professor with regard to 9.1 and 9.2, where it says, you know, contract A on the final grant be awarded to a bidder that did not score the item or point. I can foresee circumstances like that. For instance, you might have, say, a number of people, you know, bidding for a job, for a contract, say, in the building industry, and the person with the most points In fact, he's known to have both. You know, houses of a poor standard. No, you don't want it. You don't want him to build again, although he's got the most points. So you may say, no, 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 we're not going to accept him, we're going to accept the second one. We know he's a good builder, he's a good quality. But then I think where I agree with the researcher is on line two, is that where they report to the Auditor General and the Treasury, that those two organs of state should have the power to say yes or no. It shouldn't just be a reporting and a rubber stamp and no reaction from them. In other words, they must be able to, they must be in a position to say, well, yes, okay. Because they must justify the grounds on which they say we don't want the best or the best that has the best. And then just the other one that I want to raise is 10.4b, Chair. You know, I agree with the researcher there that you know, that's a bit contradictory. The funds are no longer available because you are supposed to do the bid entitlement before the time. You should know before the time what you're going to do. And then the other one that I just wanted to raise was part 3, 11.1. I'm just wondering whether, you know, for local manufacturers, whether it's not better to maybe give a percentage discount, which you also put in your bidding document, say, you know, or you have percentage preference, in other words. You know, here it says it's the award of bids offer, and such bids may be advertised with a specific bidding document that only local manufacturer products will be considered. I'm saying it shouldn't only be that. We could rather say, you know, local manufacturers will get an X percentage. You can put that in your budget document that will get an X percentage preference. Do you understand what I mean, Chair? So it's not that somebody from outside your town cannot bid, but either they can bid, but your local guy will get a preference of say 20% of whatever the tax might be, and you put that in the bid document before the time.
But meanwhile, you're speaking, Honorable Sir. I'm not sure if it's a definition, so the definition for local. Because local might mean many things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If somebody from overseas, certain local, someone from overseas, means talking about the South African, might mean a local in terms of the history of the town. I'm not sure the definition.
No, there's no definition.
There's no definition for it.
No definition for it.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. Forgive me if I ask a question that might
have been asked. No, no, no. For the first time.
I knew, yes. But I just want to pick up on your local. Mm-hmm. Just this morning, I received a call from the area, which is my constituency. There's a municipality called Ujoli.
Yeah.
Right. But there's a district called Kuku.
Yes.
Ujoli. The contract awarded on a regular basis. Now the complaint from people there is that these contracts or tenders are never awarded to people that have their businesses within the Umchoni boundaries, but it's awarded to people from Hibiscus Coast, which is further away. But Hibiscus Coast falls within districts, Ugu district. Now, you see now, so the definition is very important because people can hide behind this. Local people are complaining that when we mean local, we mean if we're talking of city of Cape Town or some municipality, we mean within that municipality, not the district. Unless there's nobody within that municipality, then you go to district and then you go outside of the
boundary.
But people, even the legal people are not getting what, the accountants are not getting what. It's not only people with specialized services that they can render. So I think this definition is very important so that we don't allow officials now to say, no, but we didn't get anybody here in this municipality. There's no lawyers here, there's no so-and-so accountant. We have to go out. And they'll have their own reasons for doing that, which we need to. So I support your point on local. But Chair, forgive me. You know, I don't know what this is. It's a bid for a tender. Normally, you know, when you bid for something, you go to an auction, you want to buy a space car, you want to buy state-owned land, you want to buy a building that the state wants to dispose of to a member of the public, and you go and put in a bid.
to the commission.
All right. Now, so then there I can understand you give it to the highest bidder, right? The highest bidder. But now, when it comes to a tender, you normally give it to the person who tenders the lowest for a job. So, yeah, I'm a bit confused. Say I want to build a parliament, and my tender is 100 million, and yours is 120 million. Right? They won't give it to 120 million, they'll give it to 100 million. Because my tender is lowest, provided I comply with some of the ratings and things like that. So I don't understand the bidder and the tender yet. The bid system and the tender system. So that's something that maybe the research can give me clarity on. And secondly, you know, the researcher made the point of these committees, technical committees, evaluation committees, adjudication committees. Now, we had a case in SCOPA where a technical committee recommended a particular management consultant. They rated it 1 to 10. But then the bid evaluation committee overrode the technical committee and decided that number 6 was recommended number 3.
You say the bid committee?
Yes.
Overruled
the technical
committee.
Right? And decided, no, that the number 6, the technical committee put this company at number 6. But they gave the job to the number 6 company as number 1. So the rules need to be clarified here.
That's for practical purposes. I've never sat in those kind of committees, and I've never been involved in those kind of issues. Otherwise, the bid committee means that it's a committee that will listen to the teacher. But the technical committee has to research the ground, the conditions, and the level of your certifications and all those things. But you can't actually committee, what?
Adjudication committee. An evaluation committee.
Yeah. But in this case, what happened, maybe I can give you the N2 Gateway project. They invited management consultants to manage this whole housing project. The technical committee looked at all the bids that were submitted on the basis of its technical, checked on these technical facts, and said, well, this company seems to be...
I'm confused that one. you challenge the team.
That was a bid, but...
Chair, can I just say...
Can
I just say on the bid, there's a specific definition for bid in the documentation. Yes. Bid means a written offer in a prescribed or stipulated form in response to an invitation by an organized state for the provision of services, works, or goods through price quotations, advertised, competitive bidding processes, or proposals.
Yeah. So that's to come and render it. But not to buy something that was taken. Oh.
And that's for the provision as well.
Of a service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why must you take the highest bidder?
No.
The highest tender.
I think that you're right. It's a question that we need to raise. There's a tendency to use the technology interchangeable. People think it means by the same people, you know. And technically, when people are taken to court, but maybe the other thing would be the point that Terence is raised of going back to original judgment and the preferential procurement. What technology do they use today? Is the tender there? Is it the B? But I think the point that you're asking Chief said, how do you feel if there's a work that needs to be done? Maybe they estimate that work to be a million. How do you give it to the highest person? Sometimes maybe more than that.
I just wanted to attempt, you see, on this issue of the getting to the health person. Because I think really what Telan was saying is that in terms of the BEE status, because as you said, that we'll be having 80-20, and then the 80% is responsible for pricing, meaning if you submitted your bids, you see, with the pricing, and then you are the lowest, and you get, you see, your 80% in terms of that, and then they also consider the issue of the BEE, meaning if you're 100% compliant, for example, you get the entire 20%, you see, of the amount which are allocated to that service. But if you are not compliant, then you get 0%, and those two are combined, and then now they take, you see, the bid according to who complies, you see, according to those. Meaning if you're having a lowest, you see, price, and you're 100% compliant, you stand a better chance, you see, to win the bid.
Oh, you're right. I think that I'm not sure if you understood what you said. That this highest score is in terms of for the point that the person.
Yeah, okay. So it means if it's the highest score, it's the lowest score.
Yeah, it's the highest score.
Not highest bidder, it's highest
score. Highest score.
Lowest score.
Yeah, the highest score.
Highest score is the lowest score.
Yeah.
The highest score is probably the lowest.
Yeah,
it's
not talking. Let's not
quote for a
question.
No, I'm just making it easy for semantical purposes. But yeah. What it says is that, you know, if you, for instance, tender for a building, you erect a building, like Parliament, as Oliver Wilson said, you know, and you get points. For BEE, you might get points for other matters because your parliament is to use the 90-10 principle.
Yeah.
And but you're going to be awarded points on the lowest. You're going to get more points for being the lowest tender.
Chairman, could it be, for example, you and Mr. Swartz tender to build parliament? He put in a tender for 100 million rand. You put in a tender to be a bid for 105 million. In normal circumstances, he should get it, if you look at price.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If he meets all the technical requirements, he should get it at 100.
What is
this
called?
100. 100.
Yours
is
105. And
it
doesn't go
out
the fact
that
my surname is
Swartz.
And
normally, he will get it. But what this would say, no. Honorable Sogoni here is BE compliant. Now, if we look at the score, he scored so many, he got the highest score for price. You got
the
highest score, you got lower than him. But when you add this other element, your score now will be different. So you can get the tender for 105 against 100.
This is what the score is all about.
Sir, I just wanted to come in, but it looks like Honorable Narin Singh has just, you know, photocopied my mind. So now I just want to remind and put more emphasis on the issues on the issues that were highlighted by members earlier on. That I think, yes, again, I want to agree with Honorable Swart that the issue of discount on the bid document for the local manufacturers is quite important, you know. And also, secondly, the definition of local firms, what do they mean? I think in the regulation there should be you know, a definition of what is that we call local firms, you know, just to resolve some of the encumbrances, you know. And also some of the clarity questions probably again will be addressed by the National Treasurer as they are coming next week. I think for us was just to highlight some important areas and, you know, just to give a wake-up call to
our... It's very important that, you know, the rule develops particularly, the discount, you know, the tax was going to be by the amount of fees. For instance, that specific municipality said, you know, if you are from within the municipal boundaries of, say, whatever that place stores or whatever the case might be, you get a X percentage discount, and that goes into your tender document. So that everybody that lives in George and that wants a tender knows that they're going to have a 10% advantage.
That's local content.
Yeah.
I think the chairperson is a local boundary, which actually a very good one. You can get more clarity on the definition of localness. I agree with Mark, because we come out of a place where we experienced in the past. The people before us was very strict on that. You buy something in a specific local area, outside that area, and there's a 5% benefit. But I agree on that point. We must definitely get more clarity on it.
Okay, any other comments on that?
Oh, I'm
okay. Any other comments? Okay. Chairperson, maybe just two comments. Maybe somehow or the other, you know, all these change alerts of bidders, you should have a database. Departments should have a database with their points for BE already worked out. Because now I'm worried about implementation. You know, you send in a bid, people send in, then a committee looks at it, then you find, no, you want to give it to number two and not number one, then you go to the Auditor General, and then, now, you know, your service will get more expensive.
Yeah.
And number one, yeah, more charge. So it's implementation. And then secondly, the SARS thing, you know, the tax clearance thing. Mm. Because I know a lot of people have difficulty in getting tiniest tax clearance. So we must find out from Treasury, I mean, you know, about this tax clearance thing. Because a lot of people did get ruled off because of tax clearance. And not only SARS tax, but payment for municipal services and charges.
Yeah.
People get ruled out for that and weighed that year. Because I know also a contractor came to me, a normal guy. He had contracted for some garden services. And but his rates, now they found out that he had a property somewhere and his rates were not paid. Mm-hmm. So let's say he tendered 20,000. Mm-hmm. They gave the contract to a guy who tendered 100,000 because his rates and all that were paid. Instead of giving this man a chance, he had to go and clear this thing. They just ruled him out because you didn't pay your municipal service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're not promoting the ruling people out on these technicalities.
Mm-hmm. I just say to you know, to on that example, for instance, the town where I come from, George, if a person hadn't paid, didn't pay, or hadn't paid, you know, rates and taxes, we still gave him the lowest or the best bit of the contract, but we had a stipulation there that he will pay X percent of that towards his rates and taxes.
That's
right.
Yes, but the question maybe that I might throw back to the committee is, I hear what Honorable Sin is saying. If further, I think they would want to prescribe everything, or because now if they prescribe everything, they might end up it means that entity that is a kind of but I hear the point that Honorable Steve is saying is that if for example clear regulations, it means that everyone, if the tender is from Department of Public Works or other one is issued by defense, in terms of the broad principles, there will be no difference. But isn't that some of the guidelines that are supposed to go to the your technical to the specifics now, which are dealt with at the level of the technical team of that particular entity?
and so forth. Which regulations will perhaps be or requirements to be prescribed there at that level? And the one occurred and that's what I should think.
Can I add to that? When coming to it, it takes me to the very, very implementation where we sit with committees trying to tell us that this project did not work. And you go deep into it, you realize they tell you that the tender didn't work, these people are not properly qualified. Then it tells us, what is your procurement system, referring to that entity that caused the delay, like maybe in the building of a hospital, where they tell you very, very small things that, no, these people are not well trained. The tender delayed because someone in the department didn't follow it well. I said, it can be clear, but the final part where it's going to affect us as a committee, like, why did you not spend?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you not spend?
Mm-hmm.
And they take you back to the tender. Mm-hmm. And as a committee, we ask ourselves, is there any procurement system?
Mm-hmm.
Where did it go wrong? Because we expected these people to use this money. These people should know
mm-hmm.
all the procurement system and policies as they are.
Mm-hmm.
But going down to that level of implementation at that local level, something never happened, but everything seems to be in place. Where does the change stop? It goes to where the chairperson is saying, but maybe I put it in the way that I'll rather understand that they did not spend because they did not follow the proper tendering system. Because that's where we get caught when asking details. There was no tendering system. We had the one of Peter, where it seems it comes to planning, where Department of Public of Home Affairs couldn't go through because something was done after the whole process was done. That's when they decided to do forensic audit. I don't know how it comes in. You go to the municipalities, they can't fix the pipe or fix, I don't know what, anything at the local level. It's still an institution that affects us when we talk about local government or we talk about health and a clinic. And they'll tell you about the tendering system somewhere that went wrong. And we ask ourselves whether they have a proper document. Is this part of this whole exercise we are doing here?
Before you come,
I think also, Chair, I just want to add one or two issues here, which maybe can be taken up with National Treasury for in a week with regard to this regulation as well, because it seems some of the issues, you know, are still outstanding in this regulation are not being addressed. Firstly, the issue of database, I just want to add something on the issue of database that has been highlighted by Honorable Singh, that they should have a database. And also, further to that, I think the bill should provide somewhere, somehow, you know, a structure that will evaluate that database as to check whether the people who are in that database, you know, the system does allow opportunities to be circulated, you know, to empower, because the regulation, if the regulation is serious about empowerment of people, it does not have to give tenders to one and single person each and every time, you know. But opportunities should be circulated, you know, to all people. So I think there should be some sort of a committee that will review the whole process, the whole, you know, database. So Chair, who is?
I made an apology to this.
I did apologize for
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Chair. The welcome, Koshi. Chair, so, Chair, I was still saying that there should be probably a provision on this regulation that says there should be a structure that will oversee the procurement process in terms of this database that was highlighted by Honorable Singh. Who is benefiting in this procurement system? Whether it's one and the same person every now and then. It should circulate the opportunities, you know. It should give opportunities to other people as well, you know. So that is why it's important to have the database that Honorable Singh was talking about. And having that database being reviewed to check if people are actually being empowered, you know. It's not only one person or similar people that are being empowered. Secondly, the procurement delays. The committee has picked up that as a challenge, but the regulations have not addressed that. Thirdly, it doesn't seem to be solving the problem, the issue of fronting behavior, where people seem to be complying, whereas in fact there is a fronting somewhere, somehow along the process. Thanks, sir.
I think it was around the issue of compliance that was raised by Honorable Member. I think one thing that you see this framework doesn't address is the issue of the remedies that are taken if a non-compliant official within the non-compliant official within the department, because what it seeks to address is the non-compliance by service providers. But at the end of the day, I think if we really want it to see it functioning, we need also to have remedies in cases where officials within some certain departments didn't comply, you see, with this particular framework.
No, it's fine, but I think that this point that has been raised, that now for me, that I mean the regulations are important, but many a time we hear that the FEDA or the B took longer than expected, and we have another three, but three. If it is built for everyone, an organ of faith must try to make an education for people, properly planned for, and part of the actually, the cost of the program. Bad or good for education is to be made. Only, so not yesterday, I actually behaved that. Somewhere the standard had to be changed because they find the well, it was in the form of by public web because they found that the standard was still in English. So they had to change. So it means that the new preparation are not done. This thing is not done. But I'm not sure if there are any comments.
Chairperson, just on your point there, very important point, because you know, there is a thing in tendering called variation order. Variation order is where, and it's happening, I know, in many places, where you tender 5 million bucks, you are the lowest. The next is 7, 8, 9 million. But by the time that job is finished, you get paid 10 million. Because what you do, you get the job because you know somebody in there. You go in at a low price. And then they say, oh, but you know, when I went there, it's dolomitic, it's this, that is wrong, this is wrong, that is wrong. Now you've got the contract already. So you keep sending a new invoice now. And the person on the other side knows what is happening, right? And they keep paying it. Like this case of Siberia Technology, they tendered for 5 million. They were eventually paid 12 million. So we must ask Treasury about this variation order. What can there be a percentage, like, you know, a Director General can't spend more than 8% or something like that in terms of PFMA, can't buy more than that. We must ask about, shouldn't there be a capping? Because they should plan properly. Whoever is giving out the benefits plan, according to this 318, that you must estimate that this will cost 8 or 9 billion. Or if it goes to 10 billion, it's fine. But not from 5 to 1.
Yeah.
People just keep sending invoices after, after this.
I agree with Honorable Singh that, you know, I think that they make the differentiation here in the definitions on the, as to firm price and non-firm prices. But it's with the non-firm prices where you really have a problem, because that's where they start with the variation order. And I agree that you can actually go down on the VOs. So, you know, I think it's with the determination of the actual contract document that they should be very firm and say, you know, we will not allow variation orders. So you must build that in if you want to. Maybe you're going to pay more now, but you're going to pay in the end, because once you start with variation orders, the people will take you down.
Okay. I'm just hoping that we not in this point so that people could respond to this. But the other question that I just had myself around the three on the planning, I'm not sure if this three is really sufficient. For instance, if you take the example that Ronald has been talking about, I mean, from the report that we got yesterday, that they found that the area is Hellenistic. At what stage? I suppose that it's a bidder who found that the area was, when the tender was already awarded, so, they found that the area was Hellenistic, and then to cancel and do what? Because I'm saying this three, to me, doesn't seem to be covering everything. So that's the property plan. Whatever property plan means, property plan and the property process, not just the property plan. So we don't say where the property is. That's the issue that is the kind of from the things that we do sufficient to ensure that once that property claim is done, now the seller will be able to run now. We know that not so much concession. But okay, the other question that I just want to throw is on page 9, it takes the first point for acquisition of the information account. It's up to a value of 1 million. Just trying to throw it I know that it can be controversial if otherwise we're saying on the 1820 point would apply to
service
or up to a million
by one million.
That does that really, what is the intention of this? Is the intention not to empower people? And if we think that 1 million land is sufficient to empower the people, I'm not saying that this is wrong, I'm just asking, I'm just throwing. I don't know everyone to call it alternative suggestion, but I'm just throwing. Okay, and in other words, once that is determined, then it means that it affects this 90 test, whether it would start from
1 million.
I think that's
If I may have the tax clearance again, I'll come to that on page 17. On page 17. What is the position with Lydia on the blacklist? Now, my information is the other day that Trump phoned me about one of my people in my constituency. It was for a house loan. And he didn't qualify because he was outstanding of about the Druids account of 43 or 45, make it understand. But he didn't qualify for a home loan of 250,000. He qualified actually for this one thing, according to this Credit Act. Is that, well, that's also not negatively affected. They can't count. I'm just asking that for myself.
No, I think that you know, we make this wrong sometimes with good intention, but there might be have negative consequences. In fact, at times, there's no guidelines, there's no law. You take, for instance, someone is looking for work, for a student or some weird project, outstanding loan of the student loan. And that person has not been able to pay, and now it is blacklisted. The person cannot get the job because once it's blacklisted of the loan that he or she has not been able to pay. So I'm saying, there is no law that says that. When people are applying for a job, those kind of things must be looked in people's profile. So, there is no law. It's just internal arrangement of a particular company. And I think that as Parliament, we really need to guide those kind of things. But many people get this not because the person, I'm not saying not because the person has stolen or of anything, but the person has not been hasn't been working for a particular time and not been able to
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on page 15, draft for public comments. I'll refer to 9. An organ of state must, when calculating comparative price, take into account any discounts which have been offered unconditionally. But the word unconditionally, Chair, I mean that, with due respect, can be interpreted in a number of ways. Any unconditional sort of discount, in my experience, if you're in a business circle, can be abused in such a system. I'd like to have further clarity from the officials there. Should we retain that word unconditionally? Can't we just refer to take into account any discounts offered? Yeah. On the space 15, sir. 15.
That is.
It can lead to abuse. I might be wrong. Yes, item number 9 on.
9 on page 15.
On part of which have been offered where they can take. But any unconditional, with due respect, that can be abused or can be misinterpreted. I don't know. Can we just say. More clarity on that, Chairman, from a legal point of perspective? Should we retain unconditional there?
No. We'll raise it with them. We don't have an answer. We'll raise it with them and then talk about the conditional discount.
Right. I'd say just discounts. Unconditional discount is good. It's fraught with saying that that's my consideration. I don't know what the fraught is saying to you.
And 11 says the point cross must be rounded off to the nearest second decimal point. I don't know. Why not the first decimal point? I don't know.
Yeah, it's more business.
Yeah, that's why I was just asking that this mini maximum of the medium.
There is another thing.
Is it really, maybe is it really a power?
You know what? I think it was Trump that told us that they haven't got space for all their documents required. Now, my question is that I've only seen this also in mind what the Auditor General told us. They have also must of stuff. If you send everything to the Auditor General, which actually isn't the annual report, to the President, I'm just thinking at the end of the day, just for me, the practical thing, we have lots of paper, very complex implementation, that is the big issue. Are we 80% busy with filing papers? 20% in the job, or we are 80% busy with implementing testing. That's what my concern is with all this.
Asking the right question to the right people, to the legislator, you must answer. You must answer you. In other words, to understand, to monitor.
Yeah.
Now I think that's a deep session it's a deep session, the monitoring of the we have pieces of legislation that monitoring them. I'm not sure if there are any in our comments and then
nothing. You know, generally speaking, Chair, I think one good thing about the proposal is that it will assist SMEs to spend it much more easily.
I'm sorry that I insist on this question. This minimum. I'm not sure what is the minister yesterday tabled taxation law.
Yeah.
I'm not sure now. What about the minimum of the minimum that your FME is supposed to pay? But I know that in the past, when this taxation laws were introduced, they would then all the time extend or increase the point at which an SME might detect, you know, which is not something like that. Now we're having a very good meeting. With a very good meeting, but a short meeting, and I must if there's no comment then around this, they take this opportunity to thank the members for coming today, because this was not a properly scheduled meeting, but because yesterday we didn't conclude what we have suggested, with the admin, that our admin section,
what do I mean to say? Shall we respect that?
Is that if we could get the program for the next week, for the following week, as early as possible? We have submitted our from there,
Chairperson, you're suggesting next week we have the answer. I think we stand in session. You say correctly on Thursday, of course, according to the program, they still have to make certain that Thursday is a focus meeting, because I see it's scheduled for next Thursday and Friday.
No, I think that we'll have to do that, and I hope that other parties will have to apply to the Thursday. It's a caucus day, and I know that everyone is expected to attend those caucuses. And just with the MAPI Commission, and of course that. For the AMC members, we will be able to let them know time out to so that if then there are challenges, we can do that. I'm sure that we get together and then hopefully that that will agree. Because Parliament had intended that those threat plans would be submitted by the 28th of August. So we're giving now a little upside to the time frame that we have. I'm hoping that thank you very much for reminding us.
Chairperson, sorry, there's one thing that you mentioned at the beginning of the meeting about municipality and the role of the state. Now, what we found in scope of other committees is Treasury has got guidelines on the establishment of municipal public accounts committees. We've got public accounts here, we've got public accounts in all the provinces.
Mm.
But the law is written such that it says they may form, not shall. And when we questioned the auditor, Treasury said, well, we, the lawmakers, made it may and not shall. So one of the big challenges in municipalities is there are no public accounts. Because of the name. And a lot of them, they don't want to establish them. Some of the more progressive, Kaoteng has spearheaded it, the MEC was very good, Matlango, I think, a few years ago, she went forward and she's got it to it. So it is an accountability. So sometimes or the other, whichever committee, we need to look at the May and the Shah, because it's going to be important for going forward that they have something. And then with regard to the annual report, what we do and what we're going to do is so far, we've got committees that will look at all the annual reports, 275 auditors. And then we will decide which one we think has so far, and which departments we should invite for public hearing. But it's the portfolio committee that should be asking questions at the annual report in the normal interaction with the portfolio committee.
Now, I think it's very true. And the issue that we're not sorry to get back to is, and sometimes when you ask the legal people about me, the master of that, sometimes they will tell you that it has the same effect. And then the court did the phone out to call the completed application. But I think that the intention was that maybe they should have. And I think the further in the staff talking spoken about amending of both the not that MSSA, but I know about the PSSA, but there's not yet come forward to Parliament to facilitate those proposed amendments. Maybe that you have noticed that part with the MSSA, but the effect is too much. Might have to be looked at. Because the other problem, both with PSSA and MSA, is that they were implemented over a period of time, you know, trying to give people a home, those who were not ready, your high, what are they called? The medium, the high ones, the medium, and the lower ones.
I think that is something that we need to take note of.
Maybe raises with this trailer. Sometimes it says that minimum amount of municipalities don't have that the edge of the needs to be looked at. So that it doesn't make it difficult for people who want to do all of that.
Thank you.